so many hands on my part. I met young men and young women who were pressured and coerced into going into this ideology, that were receiving the puberty blockers and the drugs and surgery, and now regret it. The detransitioners that won't hire, that Dick was mentioning, is from this great ministry to minister to them and say, look, God can redeem anything no matter what you've been through. And he's got great testimony. So I strongly encourage you, if you're able to go to the next room here, he's phenomenal. But I've also seen kids on the other side that are totally immersed in this ideology. And they're celebrating, like, oh, I feel so great to serve from puberty blockers. And my heart breaks when every one of those kids, I see my own son, my own daughter. And I think, oh, God, what can I do to just, like, keep this kid from going down that path? Because we know that right now it may feel great. And we're going to talk about this a little bit. You may feel like you've got this high, oh, I'm exploring these new identities, and I've got these drugs coursing through me. They make me feel great. But as we're going to see, you start following where that path goes, and you get a year or two later, and we start seeing these terrible outcomes. And that's what ultimately drives all this, is the hearts and minds of these kids are being deceived, outright deceived, not just by the medical community, not just by the gender clinics, but ultimately by our adversary that is lying to these kids and telling them, did not really say you were born a male, did not really say you were born a female, taking us right back to the garden. Initial deception from the serpent, is God really safe? And part of what we're standing for in all this is saying, yes, God wonderfully and beautifully created you a young man and a young woman and has an incredible plan and design for your life. Don't buy into this deception. Embrace this truth. And that's what we're standing and fighting for. Now, when I start talking about this issue, I first want to talk about terminology because it is very important how we talk about this. So let me give an example. In the abortion debate, we're advocating to protect life and liberty. Do we call them clumps of cells? No. That's the other side's language. They want to dehumanize the life and liberty. We even avoid things like fetus and things like that because we want to use language. No. That is not some medical thing inside of your body. That is a human child. It's an unborn infant in your womb. We want to use accurate language that accurately depicts what we're talking about. The other side likes to use language that sort of confuses things. Clump of cells, fetus, embryo, all of these things. But our job is we have to take it back. Let's be very clear with what you're talking about. And that's why one of the things, and I was intentional as Nick and I were working with this, as you'll see in the program, the title talks about protecting youth from gender-affirming care. I want to start off by saying we should never be using that term. And I wanted to use it here intentionally because that's a lot of terms for people here. Oh, gender-affirming care. We've got to fight against gender-affirming care. Well, let's talk about that term. That's the other side's term. That sounds like a great thing. Affirming. I like to affirm. Affirming feels good. I affirm my kids when they do something good. When they do their homework, I affirm them. Oh, what are we doing? We're just affirming that your gender, your sense of self, what you think you are, is the true you. We're affirming the deception is what we're doing. And adversity. As you will see, the moment you put kids on puberty blockers, you're putting them through a one-way path towards lifetime medicalization. You will become a lifetime patient. Because once you start with puberty blockers, you got to keep them going. Because what does your body want to do? Your body wants to go through puberty. Like we were designed to do, it is a natural, normal, healthy function, like breathing, like growing. It's almost like trying to, like, put a kid in a box and say, sorry, you can't grow more than this tall. Your body is fighting against that because your body was made to grow. Like our bodies were made to develop through puberty. So many important things happen to our brains, which I'm finding out every day with my 12-year-old son. I'm like, oh, there's a problem in your brain, right? There is changes that happen in young kids' minds, thank goodness, through puberty. Those are good, healthy things in which changes them from an immature child to an adult that's capable to one day have a family of their own and be a productive member of society. There are physical changes. The very things that allow a child to go from a, you know, a young being that can't have a family of their own to be able to reproduce, to be able to have children of their own, that's what puberty is meant to be. So you've got to keep kids on those puberty blockers. Then you've got to get on these hormones, right? Because it's not enough to just stop puberty. You're still got the anatomy and physiology and hormones that your body's trying to bring. Now you've got to start putting them on the opposite sex hormone. So for a young man, that means pumping them full of estrogen. And again, you have to do that for the rest of your life. If you're a company that makes estrogen, you know, it's a great new market. And again, it's not just somebody that, hey, you know, we need you to take estrogen for this 6 to 12 month period, maybe for deficiency or something, for the rest of their life, they're going to be on this. And then we add one more layer on top, the surgeries. This is not a one and done deal. When you start down this path with surgery after surgery after surgery, as you are trying to take your natural body and make it appear as something it's not. And the most tragic part of this, your body, just like it wants to go through puberty, your body wants to heal itself. And when you start not only removing healthy body parts, but trying to create false ones, your body rejects that. When you create a wound in a male's body to try and become a built female body, that wound wants to heal. When you start adding things to female bodies that don't belong, that body wants to say, this doesn't belong, and reject it. So for the rest of your life, you're going through constant surgery after constant surgery just to try and perpetuate the deception of this identity that they're trying to live in. You ask, who is behind this? These gender clinics that are popping up everywhere that's saying, we can make a good living off these kids. Not recognizing the damage, well, they do recognize the damage they're doing, just callously disregarding the damage that they're doing to these kids. So let's talk about that a little bit more. When we talk about transitioning a child, there's really two components of this. And a lot of we're going to focus on the medical side. But I do want to start on this idea of this social transition. You may have heard me talk about this yesterday, these secret social transition plans. What do I mean by that? Well, this is a lot of times what is the sort of the first phase of when a child or even an adult starts identifying as a different gender. It involves picking different names and pronouns. So it's like, I now want to identify as Sally, and I want you to refer to me as a female. And you have to start going by my preferred name, my preferred pronoun, or you're hateful and you're a bigot. And then starting to change the dress and behavior. The males begin to wear dresses and have a more feminine appearance, put on makeup, begin to act more feminine. And then starting to demand to use sex-segregated spaces, to say, I want to use the women's restroom, I want to be in the women's locker room, I want to play on women's sports teams, all of those things that we were talking about yesterday, to demanding in social settings, I want to do everything a woman can do and go everywhere a woman can go. And it even includes changing your identification document, your driver's license, your passport, and even your birth certificate. And this is one of those things that, sadly, we weren't on the lookout for this as we should have been. And years ago, many states began to say, yeah, we'll go ahead and let you change your birth certificate if you had a sex change surgery. Well, the problem is, that birth certificate is supposed to be a record of facts at a specific point in time when you were born. I know if we pull up my birth certificate, it's going to say a lot of things. It's going to say, what was my sex? How much did I weigh? What time was I born? Where was I born? What county? What city? What hospital? Who was my mother? thing with this is I think a lot of states are starting to recognize the mistake that was made in allowing these documents to be changed. And say, what can we do? Sort of put the genie back in the bottle and say, no more, that these need to be accurate records of who you are the moment you were born. Because it does matter for the rest of your life. So that's the social transition. So when you hear about that, this is, we're not getting into the medical side of things. This is just sort of how a person behaves. Here's maybe some changes to legal documents. We then go into the medical transition. And this really actually falls into sort of two categories. There we go. One is this idea called watchful waiting. And the other is the, again, I'm using the other side of terminology, the affirmation treatment. What do we mean by these two things? Watchful waiting. So let's say you have a child that says, Mom, Dad, I'm beginning to question whether I was born in the wrong body. Maybe I'm really a girl. When a lot of times with watchful waiting, the first question is, what's the underlying cause of this? Why are you beginning to feel this way? So the whole idea is, so many of these kids, there's something else going on that's leading to this confusion. You remember yesterday I was talking about our client here in Wisconsin, that Hillary case, a young woman that in the midst of COVID, when she was having to do everything remote, she's feeling anxious, she's feeling disconnected, she was just struggling with what is going on, I don't understand, I feel isolated from everyone, something is wrong. And if you're a friend of the internet, she gets this, well, maybe you're born in the wrong body. You see, what her parents realized when they went to a good counselor was the problem was not that she was born in the wrong body. The problem was the anxiety, the depression, and the isolation. And when she got the treatment for that, when they said, let's get to the root of why are we feeling depressed? Oh, because you're isolated from your friends. Well, let's find some ways for you to get reconnected, to have that social development that you need. What started happening? Those feelings of gender confusion began to fade away. Because it was never about that. That was always some ideology that was coming and saying, oh, you've got problems. This is the solution. You're born in the wrong body. And it's simply false. And this is what we're starting to hear more and more. These statistics about the number of kids that are being diagnosed with gender dysphoria, how many of them have things like on that autism spectrum? How many of them have things like bipolar or multiple personality issues? How many of them that high rates of anxiety, depression, and all of these other things? And so imagine, like, you go to the doctor, and you're just like, hey, doc, you know, I've got this, this pain in my right arm, and it's driving me crazy, and it's beginning to feel the rest of me, and the doctor's like, yeah, that sounds terrible, let's amputate your leg. And you're like, well, no, the problem is here, not here. And the doctor's like, yeah, but let's just go ahead and amputate your leg. We would recognize that doctor is crazy and has no business doing this. Well, now apply that to these young kids. I have depression. I have anxiety. You know, I'm maybe on the autism spectrum. I'm beginning to question my gender. The doctor says, well, gender, let's put you on drugs and surgery. Why are you ignoring everything else? Why are a beautiful young woman dressed in comfortable clothes, and you're no less of a woman than anyone else out there. That's what the watchful waiting is. It's just working with gifts and let them know it's okay that you don't always line up. That doesn't mean you're not a male. It doesn't mean you're not a female. It means you're uniquely and wonderfully created by God. You're just who you are. I think that's a beautiful message. We as Christians can communicate to kids. Say, it's okay. You don't fit in. God knows exactly what he wants you to do and the talents he's given you, and let's help you find a way to explore. And I think that's a beautiful response to this gender ideology, to a God that says, you're not just a box that you're put into. You're spiritually and wonderfully created. You are knit together in your mother's womb by heavenly Father with the exact talents and giftings and creating you just the way you are. Okay. So let me talk a little bit more about this medical treatment and that kind of, you know. So once you start them down this path towards this affirmation, towards this gender transition, what you're putting them on is this one-way street. And how this lines up is starting somewhere between 8 to 10 years old, sometimes a little bit later, sometimes around 12, they start putting kids on puberty blockers. You want to deny them from going through puberty. You want to stop the process. That then leads to the cross-sex hormones. Again, for men, that's putting them on estrogen. For girls, that's putting them on testosterone. But again, that doesn't always deal because your body wants to mature, wants to develop. So then that leads to young women getting these double mastectomies, to men having breast implants, to removal of their reproductive anatomy, hysterectomy, and then even, like I was talking about, this effort to create reproductive anatomy that doesn't work, but that looks like the opposite sex. I was debating if I don't want to put it up here because it is an alarming picture. But just within the last week, New York Magazine, I recommend Googling, just look up New York Magazine Transgender. And they had a woman that was on the cover of the magazine that had gone through all of the surgeries. And you see this individual up there, and this individual just standing there in a pair of, like, men's briefs. And was saying, I didn't need male anatomy to be transgender, but I needed male anatomy to be me. And you're looking at this body, and all you see is chest scars and a massive chunk of this young lady's leg that was removed to create male anatomy. And I'm looking at them saying, dear God, what have they done to your body? They have mutilated you for this ideology. And yet, and then now they're parading you on a national magazine that this ought to be something that's celebrated. This is barbaric. And this is when you go back to history. When people say, man, this is a new thing, it is not. Unfortunately, we have seen historically vulnerable populations get abused and misused by the medical community. Let me take you back to the 1920s. This is when the eugenics movement was starting to pop up. This idea that we need to control the population and reproduction to get rid of undesirable traits. And the target of that was individuals born with mental disabilities. And so we started seeing efforts that the medical community completely supported. All of the medical organizations supported. We need to sterilize anybody with any sort of mental disability. Because we can't allow them to have children, because then their children are going to have a disability, and we're going to have all of this spreading throughout society. And they supported taking these vulnerable individuals and sterilizing them in brutal ways. Tragically, this went up to the U.S. Supreme Court in a case called Buck versus Bell. And it is one of the most reprehensible phrases ever heard written by a member of the Supreme Court. They upheld the law forcing individuals with mental disabilities to be sterilized and said, this law is constitutional because, quote, 3 generations of imbeciles is enough. The Supreme Court was saying, yep, we need to get rid of people with mental disabilities. That is offensive. Now, thank goodness, society came around and we recognized the damage that we were doing, and if this was written us children won't do these issues, and we have to stand against it now to make sure it doesn't happen again. And why do we know this? It's because of the long-term consequences. Remember, if I put a young kid in a box, it's going to be damaged to her body if you're not letting them grow. It's going to damage their body, their skeletal structure. It's the same thing when you deny letting kids go through natural puberty. Again, I'll bring up the example of my kid. I see the brain development that's happening in my son, and he's slowly going from sort of the childish brain to learning more maturity, to learning how to control his emotions, how to better articulate things, how to have more reason, how to have more responsibility. It is a good thing, right? Now imagine, if you can't put a kid on puberty blockers, that never happens. The very thing that we all know, every one of us in this room has gone through, we know when you're like, man, I was stupid as a teenager, right? We have all those stories, those regrets we have. We're like, man, I was so dumb back then. I thought I knew everything, and I knew nothing. Imagine if you were put on drugs, it stuck you in that place of life forever. That's exactly what we're doing. That child's brain will never go through the normal, healthy puberty process that just removes all the dumbness and lets us have an adult mind. We are depriving kids of that. So before we even get into the damage to the body, we're damaging kids' minds through this ideology. We're damaging kids' minds with these drugs and hormones. And then that again goes on to some delayed brain development. So imagine you're a 10-year-old kid, you get put up in puberty blockers, while all of your friends at school, they're maturing, they're growing up, you're stuck as a 10-year-old kid, mentally, physically. You're not getting those things that are supposed to grow you into adulthood. And so now you're having more issues and more self-anxiety because why am I not like all my other friends who are going through this? Because these doctors are depriving you of something that you were meant to go through. As I mentioned, we get to the irreversible physical changes. They say, oh, puberty blockers, they're reversible. Nobody knows. When we talk about, when they say puberty blockers are reversible, what they mean is, if you have, let's say, an 8-year-old girl that starts experiencing puberty a little early, they put her on puberty blockers just for like 6 months to a year, just to pause it and say, let's just have you, rather than having an 8, let's get you closer to 10, more towards your normal 8. And then they say, see, puberty blockers are reversible. You put a kid on, you take them off, everything's fine. Well, isn't it a lot different to put a young girl on puberty blockers for a short time, just so that she goes through puberty in a more natural time, versus putting that girl on puberty blockers forever? Nobody knows what it does. Nobody knows if you're a 20-year-old and you come up with puberty blockers, does your body ever recover? Nobody knows, and yet they continue to perpetuate the line. They're fully reversible. Yeah, if you do it 6 months for an 8-year-old girl that's gone through puberty, but not when you've done it 5, 10, 15 years, to completely deprive somebody of puberty. And you see the different purposes? One is just to say, let's put it on a more normal schedule. The other is to say, we're going to stop the schedule entirely. So don't run into the lie about the reversibility. And that's not even getting into the hormones. Because once you start putting a person in hormones, you do damage to their body. When you put a man on estrogen, you're going to irreversibly damage his body, his anatomy, his ability to reproduce. And we know that from science. We know it from stories from young women that are saying, I was on testosterone for a couple of years, and here's the damage it's done to my body. It can never be undone. But they don't know that they're ever going to be actually to have children on their own. Not because of surgery, but just because of the hormone that they're being pushed on. And again, that's ultimately leading to this infertility. An entire generation is never going to have the ability to have an actual child of their own. It's more better. Why is this so dangerous in so many ways? Well, let's go back to that watchful waiting versus affirmation. If we take that watchful waiting approach, if we take a kid that's going with confusion to say, no, we're not going to put you on drugs, we're just going to let you go through puberty. Between 80 to 95% of those kids outgrow it. Everything resolves on its own. If you just give them good counseling and say, hey, let's talk about the depression and anxiety you're feeling, but we're not going to put you on drugs, we're not going to socially transition you, we're not going to call a boy a girl, you just leave them alone. Overwhelming majority of kids will naturally grow out of it without anything else. You take the flip side. The moment you start putting kids towards gender transition, through the social transition, through the drugs and surgeries, less than 20% are ever going to go back to their biological sex. Let me put it another way. The moment you start socially transitioning, transitioning a kid. The moment you start putting them on puberty blockers, it is almost a virtual one-way street towards them rejecting their biological sex. In fact, there were some studies that are now coming out of the Netherlands where, in some of their studies, 98% of the kids put on puberty blockers go on to hormones. 98%. Now, this is not a pause button. This is basically putting you on something that's going to lead to the next thing. And once you start on those hormones, I believe it was 100% of the kids went on to the surgeries. We have got to put a halt to this. And that's why I've been so pleased that we're going to talk about the state laws a little bit more. But so many states are saying, well, let's just focus on the surgery. I'm like, the surgeries are terrible, but that's the end result. If you want to stop something, you don't stop the end of it. You stop it at the beginning. It reminds me of this old fable. There's this town built on this hill. And the kids playing at the side of the hill. And time and time again, the kids kept falling down the hill and getting injured, breaking their arms, having all these things. And the townspeople said, hey, we've got to do something about it. Our kids are falling down and getting injured. What can we do? Let's build a hospital at the bottom of the hill. Now, what's the solution? You build a fence at the top to keep people from falling off in the first place. And that's why stopping the social transition, stopping the puberty blockers is so vital. It is that fence that stops kids from falling down the hill in the first place. And that's why we've got to take a compassionate stand, because what we're trying to do is keep kids from ending up in the hospital. Not just in a story, but literally ending up in the hospital as lifeline patients of these gender transition drugs and surgeries. Again, as I kind of hit on some of these things, you know, we talk about the physical effects, the side effects of drugs, the sterilization, the surgical complications. But I want to talk about the mental health risk. Now, they've done some surveys, just youth in general, okay? The levels of depression, so they say it's about 20% of youth are going to deal with some sort of depression, 10% have anxiety, 11% have suicidal ideation. This is just thoughts like, oh, you know, I'll kill myself. 6% have actually attempted suicide. That's tragic. 16% of youth are in need of mental health services. These are shocking numbers. This shows that there's obviously some issues going on that we need to do a better job of helping kids with mental health issues. But the other side says, well, hey, all these kids have these issues. If we can just get them on these drugs and hormones, we will solve this. That's their statement. And that's what many of you may have heard in the legislative testimony. All these kids, they're going to kill themselves, they're going to harm themselves, you're going to be doing all these terrible things if you stop the drugs and surgeries. But the data doesn't back that up, because once you actually start kids on the path, once you put them on those drugs and surgeries, look what happens to the percentage. You go from 20% to 50% dealing with depression, 27% dealing with anxiety, 31% thinking about contemplating suicide, 17% have attempted it, and 46% need ongoing mental health services. If this is a solution, we're doing something wrong. If the solution is increasing mental health issues, if the solution is increasing suicidal thoughts, if the solution is increasing suicidal attempts, that is no solution at all. That sounds like you're making the problem worse. Unless you say, well, Matt, this is probably just one study. Well, let's look at what some of our allies in Europe are looking at. The country of Sweden is really one of the most progressive liberal on this issue of anywhere in the world. For decades, the state itself has paid for any individual to get the drugs, the surgeries, anything they want. Society fully supports this. They're welcome, they're embraced, and the government gives them anything that they want. So you would think if there was anywhere in the world that would show if you just allow kids to go down this path towards transition drugs and surgeries, Sweden would be the place to look at and say, man, I bet they have a great outcome. I bet everyone there is doing great, and it proves that this stuff works. What Sweden found when they followed children that had gone for drugs and surgeries, and they followed them into adulthood. So we're not talking just a couple of years later. We're following them into their 20s and 30s. 19 times higher rates of suicide. So if I'm looking at all of this, And I'm saying, what can I do to stop kids and adults from committing suicide? It's not putting them on drugs and surgeries. That's pushing them towards 19 times higher rates of suicide. To me, and to a growing body in the medical community, these transition things are part of the problem. They're what is driving up these tragically high rates of suicide. They're driving up these tragically high rates of mental health issues. Compare that to the watchful waiting, when you just need to naturally go through puberty. How much of this resolves? Now again, maybe you're saying, Matt, you're probably cherry-picking studies. You're picking this one out of Sweden and this other one. That's not the case. Because Sweden, England, and several other countries have looked at every single scientific study that has been produced. And they said, let's focus on the most high-quality ones, not one where they're just asking people to be infectious, following patients all the way through. And there is not a single study, not one, that shows the affirmation that the drugs and surgeries reduce suicide, prevent suicidal thoughts, improves long-term outcomes versus watchful waiting. Not a single study says that these drugs and hormones have any benefit versus just leaving kids alone, helping them with depression, anxiety, and other issues, and letting them go through natural puberty. So as states are looking at all of this, and Montana, and we're going to talk about this in our next session, was looking at all of this. Again, I want to present this as factually accurate as possible. I will not hide where I stand on this, but I also want to just factually say, let's follow the science. We're often accused of the conservatives saying, oh, you guys are science deniers, all this. Okay, let's follow the science. And where the science leads us is how one expert, Dr. Stephen Levine, who is the founder of the Case Western Gender Clinic. Okay, this is a guy that started in one of these gender clinics that we were talking about. And as he was following kids that were going through all this, here's what he concluded. Therapy for young children that encourages transition cannot be considered neutral, but instead it is an experimental procedure that has a high likelihood of changing the life path of the child with highly unpredictable side effects on mental and physical health, suicidality, and life expectancy. So if a guy that started one of these clinics that was bought into this ideology, but that is still taking a step back and saying, let's actually look at the science, are we helping kids? And this is what he's writing, and this is what he's testifying, he has testified about this in court. We ought to take a listen. We ought to be following the science and following what is actually good and beneficial for kids. And that's why when we talk about this issue, we want to talk about it to say, no one has the right to harm children. And so when Montana passed its SB 99 issue, what it was doing was protecting kids from these harmful, we've seen the side effects, we've seen the long-term consequences. And they're necessary. Why are they necessary? Because as we know, not a single study shows that these treatments, that these procedures, these drugs and surgeries are better than watchful waiting. They're harmful and they're unnecessary. Being pushed by these medicalized, politicized medical groups and industries. Let me give one more little stat. Let's look to the rest of the world. Again, we always, so many people say, oh, follow Europe. Europe's so enlightened. I know I've mentioned Sweden. But we are seeing a growing number of European countries that are further down the road, that have been doing this for decades. Places like Sweden, like England, like Finland, like France, like New Zealand, like Australia, have been doing this for decades. And they are following these kids. They're actually saying, let's look at the long-term outcomes and what it's doing. And what they're finding is, again, nothing is showing that this is helping kids. So they're now starting to pull this back. Sweden, England, all these other countries are saying, we are not going to make the medical transition part of what we do. Rather, we're going to prioritize mental health treatment for kids. In other words, we're going to focus on the watchful waiting. Let's figure out why these kids are going this way. Let's figure out why they're having these questions and these anxieties, and let's treat that. Let's prioritize that. So I look at this and I say, okay, if the rest of the world has been doing this much longer than us and has been doing it with much more money than us, is stepping back and saying, this isn't working. Why on earth are we following them down that same path that they now say wasn't working? Shouldn't we be learning from their mistakes? Shouldn't we be learning what works? should we be listening as they're saying, we're going to focus on watchful waiting. We're going to focus on letting kids naturally develop and deal with these underlying mental health issues. Shouldn't that be what we're doing? And so as we start talking about when we come back from the break, what states are looking at, from Montana to the many other states, this is the stuff that they were considering. And shouldn't a state be able to say, if Sweden and England and France and all these other countries are reversing course, why should we continue to run that way? Well, part of the problem is, once again, our federal government. We talked about it yesterday with these Title IX regulations that are telling public schools, if you want to continue to receive federal funding, you better start kids on social transition. You better use their names and pronouns. You better give them services. As we talked about in the first session, Department of Health and Human Services telling doctors, nurses, and hospitals, you must do these drugs and surgeries on kids. You must do these gender transition procedures, or you're going to be at risk of being sued, or the federal government's going to come after you. So at the same time when the rest of the world is walking this way, our government is kind of turning a blind eye and saying, nope, nothing to see here. Let's just keep pushing these kids on this path. And I think that's why it's been so encouraging to see state after state after state step up and say, not to our kids. You see, in my view, there's some things that are the proper role of government. And I think one of them is protecting the health and safety of its citizens. There's a reason we have a police force. There's a reason we have medical and health regulations. You know, if you look at a lot of states, you'd be surprised how many states already heavily regulate testosterone. Why? Because how can testosterone be misused? Sports. They don't want teenage boys pumping themselves up with testosterone so that they can get an advantage on the playing field. It's called doping, right? It's all the stuff that, like, all the sports organizations to stop steroids, to stop abuse of these drugs, that give them a competitive advantage because we know that those testosterone, when you pump a healthy boy full of more testosterone, it has consequences. Nobody's challenging those. Nobody's saying, how dare we not let boys get more testosterone? Because we recognize that testosterone is doing harm to children's bodies and we shouldn't allow it. So why is it any different? When we're looking at all of this, and you compare the damage of these things to testosterone, they're light years apart in how much more damaging the gender transition drugs and surgeries are. And so for a state to look at all of this and say, we have a duty to protect our kids' health. We have a duty as a state to say, this is not good. We don't think any kid should be put on these drugs and surgeries. And again, we're focused on kids here. When people reach adulthood, we recognize they can make their own decisions. It's the reason why when we talk about tobacco and alcohol, we don't allow it for kids. We let adults make their decision on it. There's so many things that we recognize. If an adult wants to get on that path, that's fine. But when it comes to our children, again, we recognize their brains aren't fully developed. That's why we don't let them enter into contracts. That's why we don't let them vote and do these other things, because we say, you're not there yet to handle the responsibility of this. And yet, when an 8, 9, 10-year-old child comes in and says, yeah, I've got confusion about my gender, we say, well, you're mature enough for us to start you on this path. And guess what? You're probably never going to be able to have kids. If I ask again, my kids today, when I have kids, I could have grown snow. We've all been there because it's not as a kid, it's all yucky and gross, and you just want to have fun. But then you start getting into your 20s, and you start saying, man, I would love to have a child of my own one day. And all these kids have been pushed on this. People like Krisha Mosley, people like Chloe Cole, you've probably heard of them, these young women who were pushed down this path, and they're now regretting it and seeing the damage it's done. And they know that they may never be able to hold a child of their own one day. And so for states like Montana to say, shouldn't be doing that process. That seems like the right thing to do. That seems like the reasonable thing to do. That seems like the responsible thing to do. So with that, we're going to take a little break. Yes, sir.
Charles,